Live from the heart of the universe, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, plasma intelligence researcher and author, Dana Kippel.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Marcy Made of Light. I am Mark Leger, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Bertaggio.
I had the pleasure of getting to see hear our interview guest at the Conscious Life Expo 2026 just a couple of months ago for her sold-out standing room only talk. And listening to her and perusing her book, A New Force, Plasma, Consciousness, and the New Human Potential, I've had a lot of ideas running through my head since. And one of them was something that I haven't thought about in years. And I actually don't remember if it was high school or college. And if it was high school, it was either my chemistry teacher or my physics teacher. When we were studying the periodic table in chemistry, or when we were studying trajectories and their velocity, or both. But one of them, or both of them, or somebody mentioned that there was this thing called ether, and it was everywhere. And then there wasn't anymore. And I'm being funny, but they believe there was, and then they decided, no, we're wrong, and they believe there wasn't, or something. And I remember that being mentioned, and it didn't come to mind until I'm listening to Dana. And so this morning, I woke up with a question. And the question that I woke up with, what does ethereal mean? And I don't know why I had that question, but I know what it means, and I use it, and people use it, and I know what they mean, or at least I think they do. And so I decided before the show, I'm going to look it up. And I looked it up, and what I got was ethereal means extremely delicate and light in a way that seems too perfect for this world. And I also got heavenly or spiritual. Well, then as I started to do a little bit more research, I learned in biblical context, ethereal describes heavenly, spiritual, or celestial entities that are non-physical, intangible, and delicate, often transcending the material world. It relates to things of God, the upper air, whatever that is, or spiritual realms, distinguishing them from or elevating them above earthly, quote unquote, flesh and blood. So, last question. I said, okay, where does the word ethereal come from? It comes from, in part, Latin, aetherius, which is of or pertaining to the ether, the sky, heaven, or the air, or upper air. And in ancient Greek, aetherios, it is of or pertaining to the upper air. And I asked myself, the Romans described ethereal based on the ether. The Greeks, ancient Greeks, described ethereal based on the ether. Oh, but all of a sudden, we don't have ether. So what happened to the ether? And I bring this up because I actually don't know if it aligns exactly, because on some level, I think ether and plasma are related. And yes, that's one of the things I can't wait to learn and find out.
You know, as I was sifting through the 663-page book, yes, that Dana put together, I've just got even more excited. I've been watching her evolution. I've been impressed with her work and her fortitude and her intelligence and her funny delivery. And when you put the whole package together, sometimes the right person comes along at the right time with the right delivery. And this is a seminal work. It's time for this awareness to come to our forefront. Yes, there's been other authors. It's been in science, but people wrote it off to science. And like you said, it was eradicated from, you know, the fifth element awareness. Yet it is everything. And Dana does such a fabulous job. And I'm so excited to learn more tonight.
Well, actually, you're so excited. You said that you're so excited your plasma is excited. And so I can't wait to learn what that means.
There you go.
Because you got a laugh
out
of Dana.
We'll review that after the interview.
So with all of that, thanks to a couple of the questions that we're going to be exploring today with Dana, because there's so much to talk about, and plus she's so interesting, we want to get into a little bit of her and her life. So we put a couple of those titles together and come up with this as the title of this episode, 887, A Hidden Force, A Forgotten Power, Used by Only 0.1% of People, ... Until now. So I'm hoping we could be helping that 0.1% grow during and after this conversation, as Dana has been doing. So we are featuring our interview guest, who is a plasma intelligence researcher, polymath, author, and filmmaker, Dana Kippel, and performance guest, emerging artist, vocalist, songwriter, Marcy Made of Light. So let's begin with our interview guest. Welcome, Dana Kippel, to the Life Changers Show.
Yay. Thanks for having me. Sorry, I couldn't help but make small comments.
Oh, I wanted to just go. And thanks for letting us finish, but
yeah.
you go now.
Well, no, just that what I call plasma, I call it multidimensional plasma, but I also call it a living ether. So it really is just a finer plasma that science doesn't have the tools to prove or, you know, observe yet, because they're not made of particles, right? They're more quasi-particles or something finer than a particle, more of a flux. So yeah, it is an ether, but the problem is that word has been kind of messed up throughout the years and suppressed. So plasma is an amazing word because it encompasses everything, because plasma means to mold, and plasma is molded on those ethereal levels by our consciousness. So I really like the name plasma because it shows, hey, we are studying it in science, the more dense plasma, the visible plasmas, and there is this more ether plasma that is invisible, that, you know, that has been suppressed for many years due to many reasons, which I'm happy to get into.
Well, and I'm glad you're saying that, because I do remember a little bit also from biology and working a little bit in a hospital that there was blood plasma.
That too.
Mm-hmm. Right. So related.
Yeah, so very related. They actually were named after each other, and they have the same properties. Basically, when there is an information exchange going on with plasma is actually a set of behaviors of reality. And So that is what physics is actually coming to right now too. There is a great researcher, I'm going to blank on his name. He's out of Belgium, the University of Antwerp, let's see if I could think of it. No, I can't. But anyway, he's studying how plasma, he also says how plasma is more of a set of behaviors of reality. Think of the fabric of our reality is basically a plasma. We're all in a plasmaverse. And with that said, blood plasma has the same properties of information exchange, protection, communication. And I theorize that the reason when we go into survival mode and you can like lift a car all of a sudden, that is due, I think, to your blood plasma. Your body literally goes into superposition where, you know, you're in a state of flow rather than your logical state of mind. And I actually think that blood plasma eventually we'll find has to do with that. But that's just my opinion. But yes, they are related in behavior, but obviously they're separate things in science.
Well, speaking of related, I'm looking at kind of the trajectory of your life, and you have shared a couple things here and there, and the millions who follow you know so much about you. I'm impressed with how much you actually put out there in the world. One of the couple things that I wanted to touch on was you were adopted, you were a gymnast, and then science and math. How does all of that and whatever else, we don't know, make Dana Kippel?
I would say that's why I call myself like a polymath, or really just like neurodivergent, because I have a lot of different things in life that like kind of feed into my plasma fascination. Let me think. So yes, I was adopted. I had I call that like a trauma of, you know, the original separation from a mother. So just like we're separated from plasma, from this divine feminine substance, right? That we don't really even know it exists, most of us in school. We normally don't learn about it. And in obviously life, almost everyone will die without learning about it. But I'm trying to change that. It is a more receptive substance. It is reflective. It is, you know, what the divine feminine archetype symbolizes. And I was cut off from my own divine feminine, you know, my own mother right from birth. And I think that happened for a reason. And that's just one thing that was a weakness of mine, and where your weakness is lies your power. And I think that's one of the many reasons that drew me to do healing work. Just because, you know, as someone who was adopted, I never felt within this world. I always felt like an alien. I never felt like I was really related to anyone. I was wondering where my mom was, but I loved my parents and all those weird feelings that come with being adopted. And eventually I did get to meet my birth mom and birth father. But that's a whole long story for another time. And then, yes, I went through a lot of trauma in gymnastics. Actually, my gymnastics teacher was abusive sexually to a lot of the girls. He's in jail. So I went through, went through that stuff. And then I also had a lot of other traumas and developed, you know, addictions. And that, though, got me to study and work in mental health in my 20s after I got my life together. And then I also was very, I had a propensity for math and science as a child. I was very gifted in those subjects, but I was very rambunctious and acted out, always in the principal's office. So I was kicked out a lot of the gifted programs and special programs I was in. So all of that to say, though, and then, you know, later in life, I got into filmmaking and then acting, and then eventually started meditating when I was 30. And that is when I reconnected to my body, to this plasma as well. It all started happening around age 30 for me. And I didn't write the book until I was 35 because I was nervous to talk about it. I thought I was crazy for a little bit there, until Robert Temple's book came out a year after I had my plasma experience. And his book was the first book I read on plasma intelligence besides what I was kind of getting downloads of. But anyway, all to say, everything I went through, I think when I talk about plasma, I don't have any belief system biases, which is why I think I have such a pure thought to what plasma is. I'm not trying to, you know, I don't have a certain angle I'm positioning, not in science, not in academia, because I never went to college. But I'm totally self-studied in research. I also think I kind of have like a gnosis for what it is. I just feel like plugged into it. But I also have the humility of someone who's had a very hard life to know that I'm not Jesus. I'm not, you know, more special than any other human on earth. And I also have an integrated approach that I involve with psychology and mental health and trauma and how that relates to this plasma stuff, because that was my life for 10 years. And I think if we don't integrate and humanize these things, that we can spiritual bypass them. So anyway, there, I don't know how much I just said, but that's some of the things that make me me.
Yes. And as you were going through life, it sounded like there was a moment or an experience where you were what, hit with plasma, or you, like what was defining?
Yeah, I would almost say like it's almost like a fish evolves from a sea creature and then walks out of the sea and becomes some kind of like human fish and realizes that they were just in this ocean the whole time. Like, I feel like I woke up to the fact that we're all fish inside a sea of plasma, and I was like bathed in it, and I like I literally heard words. It was like plasma was almost like a being, like an animal, like an ethereal animal. And it was like telling me it was misunderstood in science and that's only one part of it. And it was crying out for like healing and help and for people to hear the true story of what it is. And that, this was the time for that and how it's the vehicle for consciousness and, how it is intel has its own intelligence, not consciousness per se, but intelligence, and it holds memory, kind of like the Akashic field. That's what plasma is as well. So anyway, I just knew all this at once. It was like a huge thought form of like a thousand things. Just I was it was like I was marinating in it my whole life, and then all of a sudden this like moment of complexity reached based on me meditating, and maybe like, I don't know if I was touched by God, my higher self. I feel like it was my higher self. And, my higher self came in and was like, you're going to write this book, A New Force on Plasma. So I think it's one of those mysterious things that I could try to explain all day. And people that have had similar things understand. But if you don't experience it, it's so hard to put into words. But yeah, basically, I just had this sudden wisdom or gnosis about plasma. I don't know why. I wasn't even studying anything like that. I was literally a struggling actress and filmmaker. And when I got, when all this came to me, I was like, no. Like, I refused the call, like any journey. And I was like, I don't want to do this. Like, I want to act and I don't want to be weird. And now, obviously, I've embraced it and it's anything. I mean, it is weird, but I love what I study now. And, I feel aligned in my life. And it's brought me so much joy and also so much heartbreak and fear, because I think when you choose to go on this path of authenticity, a lot of your, traumas come up, a lot of pain comes up, and it's things to work through so you can help others. So yeah, it's been interesting.
Wow, you're doing it. What did the plasma say we miss? Obviously, if we don't know it exists, we misunderstand it, period. But anything specific that it wanted us to get?
Well, just that in science, they're studying it as plasma, as an ionized gas, but how it's so much more than that. It's this metaphysical substance that breaks beyond the bounds of science, that it is the original divine feminine, and consciousness is the original divine masculine. And it's almost like those are like the first principles of what create our reality. And those
Wow.
two things are in a feedback loop together, something I've called plasma consciousness synergy. And that's like the original pattern of everything. And who knows, maybe one day it'll go deeper. But right now, that's the foundation I've kind of found that seems to be beneath literally everything in reality. That that it's the glue to all timelines, dimensions. It's the glue of our reality. It is how telepathy is possible. It is what makes up the UAPs in the sky. It is, it is literally what makes up the fabric of our reality. Like beneath atoms, quark gluon plasma is probably the thing in science closest to, like, that literally was right after the Big Bang. Why? Because we're in a plasma universe. And this is basically as above, so below. So our invisible universe, right, which is not made of particles, just like our dreams, our visions are not made of particles, our emotions, there has to be something tangible there for consciousness to experience, some type of intelligent clay. And that is what plasma is. It is an ether clay, it is just finer than the plasma we currently can measure. But I think that will change in our lifetime.
So, if there was such a thing as a big bang or a big clash or a big light or something, then that would make sense, because isn't plasma around like lightning and that kind of energy?
Yeah, and I would call it more like the big birth or the big bloom than a big bang. I think bang is, and I'm not like a feminist per se, but bang is very, I'm sure you agree, like patriarchal, where it's just like, oh, this, like, it's more of a buzzword. But I think I'm in the school of thought that it was more this flowering, right? This more subtle energy. And I think we came from another universe, and then this universe kind of emergently flowered out of something. But I think plasma was the foundational medium in the beginning, since the beginning of time. And, let me say right now that this plasma is the same thing as orgone energy, animal magnetism, chi, prana,
Oh.
ki, energy. Like, this is a new word for a very ancient substance. But the thing is, for the first time, we are studying it in science and we are not acknowledging that. So for the first time, plasma is literally bridging ancient spirituality and science. And it's the literal metaphysical bridge. And what is walking that bridge? Our consciousness. So I think the study of plasma is what is going to connect science and consciousness.
I didn't know I was going to ask you this, otherwise I might have done a little bit of research on it, but inside I've heard that we have more microbes or foreign entities in our body that actually make up our body than our own cells. And so and that if we're good with them, like if we make them happy, then we're good inside and healthy. And I kind of got the analogy that if we're good with the right kind of plasma or the plasma around this, our life would work kind of like inside, so inside, so outside.
Yeah, I would say like yes, good, but more so coherent. So like as long as you can work with your nervous system and get grounded and feel your feelings and not suppress them, that is how you become like good, quote unquote, good with plasma and with these energies around you, your bioplasma, your biofield. It is really about learning, okay, information is coming at you at every moment, and there's when you're stressed, that's when you're taking in more information. It's literally the same as voltage, and you can misfire. But if we learn to do more embodiment practices, more practices with our bodies and our energy field, like Qigong, for instance, that is all you need to have a harmonious relationship with reality. And the more you do that and also heal your trauma, because your trauma literally coagulates knots in that field, the more you have a clear vessel to kind of open up to your intuition, to your higher self, to what you want to call God, to, that relationship with reality.
Is that the unlocking of our personal power and our creativity and all that?
And it doesn't mean you have to be perfectly healed. Like all of us are on a healing journey. And what I've had my most insightful moments when I'm at my most distressed and not healed. It's more that like when I was at those moments, I also had no belief system. I was completely surrendered, like most of us at rock bottom moments. And that is when that, mystery, that God energy, that mystery energy, that higher self comes in and touches you, right? So I think that I got off my track. But yes, basically, I don't even remember what I was saying now.
What about feelings? Like, what do you
Oh
have to?
yes. Yeah. So even if you're not totally healed, because a lot of us aren't and will never be, or that's like a thing to aspire to, and people could get actually obsessed with healing. The most important thing, and I write about this in my book, is feeling. And that means feeling everything, good and bad. Because the more you understand your emotions and the more you don't suppress anything, it doesn't mean you have to act on everything or get swallowed up by everything, but the more you let your feelings run through you, right, as plasma waves, the more that you are working with the flow of the universe, the more you'll be open to your intuition, because emotions are wave packets of information. They literally carry information about what ways you can go in life. I call it emotional technology. It's your navigation system. And yeah, the more you learn to feel, the more you are in touch with that. And that takes slowing down, getting off technology, journaling about why you're feeling a certain way, unplugging from, validation. So we're not in that era, but I think we're getting back into that era, because I think a lot of people are sick and tired of how they're not feeling.
There's an understatement. So plasma understands us or knows us. Does it know the future? Does it know our past?
Plasma is like the cosmic mother. So you could think of it as a womb that holds all of us. It's literally like, that supportive substance. That's just, it's unconditional love that we're all
Like
in. Like
amniotic fluid. We're still in amniotic fluid.
yeah, just a different one. We're just born into another one, and then we'll be born into another one when we die from here, and it'll be plasma too. Just like the babies are in a plasma membrane. Yes, it's always plasma, and it's very much that simple, actually. And it holds our memories, right? It's like the Akashic field. So What and what did you ask? If it, oh, if it understands us.
Yeah, and if it holds memory, kind of thing.
Yeah, it doesn't hold judgment, it holds memory, but it understands us always. It doesn't pre nothing can actually predict the future because the future is emergent. We do have free will. I'm in that school of thought, but what it can show you is future potentials that it holds based on your current resonance. So whatever resonance, just like a water droplet you're in right now, that ripples out potential futures and pasts. So it's technically deterministic in that way, but every moment you make a new choice or you heal something like a trauma or feel a new feeling, you're changing those ripples, which create you can create what's called an emergent future out of, which basically is you creating with plasma, with your consciousness to create a new reality or co-create it with God, with your higher self, with whatever you want to call that mysterious thing we're all connected to. So yeah, there's almost like a trinity of three, you know, you can create, you know, there's a future, there's a past, and there's an emergent future, which is really just the present. So yeah.
Wow. Okay. So you said creating with God, that is if we call plasma God.
Oh, I was saying God is more like, well, I call God more just creation energy, which is like ineffable, but some people refer to God as more consciousness or our higher selves. So basically, whatever we want to call this thing, we're creating with something. It is a co-creation. If we were just the only creator, reality would be deterministic, and it's clearly not. There's something mysterious working with us, and it's very benevolent. You know, it loves us all, and I don't think we're meant to understand or we need to understand what it is. But with whatever that is, we're co-creating with plasma, you know, our future. So that's that.
So, what is the 3D? I haven't gotten to this part in the book yet. The
Yeah.
3D, the 4D, and the 5D.
Yeah, that's just my labeling to something that is almost in every religion and mythology where reality seems to have this three-layer structure. And this is in, you know, everything from heaven, earth, and the underworld, to what did the mystics call it? There's this magician, Jacob Boehm, from the 15th or 16th century, and he makes the same kind of three layers. You can look it up in like ChatGPT. It's like in every single religion. But basically, 3D is our, for me, is our physical reality. It is basically, you know, that's where visible plasma comes in, lightning, aurora borealis, nebulas, blood plasma. It is when we're, most of us are in survival consciousness where, oh, physical reality is all there is. And then 4D, these are simply perspectives, dimensions. These three dimensions are perspective dimensions, meaning you have a different state of consciousness in each dimension. And each dimension is made of a plasma, and the plasma gets less dense. So in 3D, it's the most dense. It is like, you know, we're almost frozen here. And then in 4D, four-dimensional plasma that makes up, you can call it the Akashic realm. That is circular time. It is past, present, and future. That is where we dream, where we astral project, where the realm of the archetypes are. The Carl Jung called it the collective unconscious. That is where most alien visitations come from. They're really just unconscious archetypes and projections from our psyche that have created these really real things and experiences. So that, and that it's also where our emotions are held, where our trauma is held, where, you know, our magic is held. It is our subconscious. And then there is a fifth dimensional layer, which is, you know, the most ethereal plasma, the finest plasma. And maybe there's stuff beyond this, but this is just the way my head sees it. This is kind of where our higher selves live, what you can call heaven. And what you would call hell is the fourth dimensional layer in Christianity, but really it's not hell. It's actually where our magic power lies, and it's our connection to heaven. And it's where our emotions are, but it's covered with a layer of fear. And then, yeah, the fifth dimensional space, this is, you know, when you plug into your higher self, you have a higher vantage point. You can kind of see what where all your potentials are, when you're where your intuition comes from. It's what I call 5D consciousness. So it's, you know, when you're able to actually co-create your reality rather than being a victim to physical matter. And you know, there's still mystery. You're not totally creating your reality. You put intentions out there, and then plasma kind of brings things back to you based on those intentions. And that's why life is so fun, because it's, you know, the coolest parts in life aren't what you manifest. They're the mysterious miracles along the way. So mystery is very important key element here. But yeah, so that's how I, and oh, and 5D is outside of time and space completely. So that is kind of the launching pad to all different realities. So there are dimensions, which are 3, 4, and 5D, and then there are timelines, which are infinite, which is just like, you know, every time you make a choice, there's a new timeline. And that's within the four dimensional. And then the fifth, 5D, is outside of time and space, and that reaches what I call different realities, which are different than timelines and dimensions. So hopefully that made sense.
As much as it can at the
Yeah.
moment. So much new information. So I'm getting a sense of how you interact with plasma. I mean, in a sense, when you make the analogy of a fish in water, how does the fish interact with water? But it does, because it
Natural.
could, right?
It's just it's simple. That's actually that's a great what you just said. It's somehow really awesome because it's that simple where all we need to do is know we're in it and trust it and be ourselves. And the more we try to connect with it, the more it comes out of our hands like sand. It's like all you have to do is be in your heart energy. You have to be present. You have to be who you really are. You know, feel your feelings, you know, ground yourself, you know, connect to her earth and heaven, you know, or 5D, 3D, whatever you want to call it. It's really that simple. It's nothing esoteric. But yeah, we complicate things.
Dana, as you're sharing that, this is Mark. As you're
Yeah.
sharing that, what comes to mind are, reconnecting to a lot of the PSI studies and the ESP and the psychic phenomena. But when you're being yourself and you're surrendered like that, and you attune, and somebody thinks of you, and they call you, or you think of them, or those kind of coincidental happenings are I think the Ethernet working, because we're not trying, and we're also not shut down in our thought or fear.
It literally. So all you have to do is be in a state of play, and then all of a sudden, that's when you get your intuition back, which are these psi abilities. Those are very natural to us, and we've built a world to almost project that onto technology, which is why we have Ethernet cords. What are those? Connect us with technology. What is that a pattern of? Original pattern is us being able to do that with the ether. You know, cathedrals, they take in energy and they have these big like ether things on the top of cathedrals and cathodes, right? And they're harvest, you know, taking in energy, but we can do that with our own bodies by, you know, creating those patterns with our body. And, you know, there's so much that has been Bluetooth even is based on, I just learned, based on these runes, a B and H, these magical runes, and they were based on a king that connected people. And are the original Bluetooth.
Wow.
Yeah, and our original Bluetooth is really our telepathy. Anyway, there are all these crazy things that are just projections of what we're supposed to be. It doesn't mean technology is bad, but we've lost how to do it ourselves first.
Well, what Mark asked and what you answered, I not to this extent, but I literally asked ChatGPT that question today, and it said there is no science that proves such and such, and there's no. And I thought, well, you could have ended it with yet, but it didn't. And I asked it a couple times, came up with the same thing. And so, thank you for that answer, Mark. Thank you for the question. Now, I have to say, your book, in a way, challenges all of that, and yet
Oh,
it
yeah.
still has respect, or you still have respect. So,
Yeah.
help us with that.
Yeah, I know it's pretty shocking to me too. I actually thought I'd have a way more harder time than I've had, to be completely honest. But I also didn't, like in my intuition, I didn't think that, but my fear thought that. But one thing I'll say about telepathy and proof that, and this is why AI is not going to rule the world because it has a lot of errors, is I think you actually can prove it with anecdotal evidence. So in telepathy experiments, they use Faraday cages where electromagnetic waves cannot penetrate them, and they're able to still do telepathy. Well, guess what waves can penetrate a Faraday cage? Plasma waves. So that's the only thing that can carry consciousness. So I'm just putting that out there. You know, these ether waves. But that's what I have to say about that. And then, yes, I think the reason, and I've, you know, had many people tell me this behind closed doors who are scientists and mathematicians and even government workers, They think I'm onto something. They maybe have their mouths closed because of national security or because of academia or failure to be exiled from their, other teachers or colleagues. I don't have any of those fears because, once again, I work for myself and I could care less what anyone thinks besides, of course I do care, but I don't have like anyone to impress. The people that follow me, I hope do like me because, of course, everyone wants to be liked, but I'm not going to say something that's not true because of it or silence myself because I want to be liked. And I think a lot of people, unfortunately, have their hands tied, whether it's in philosophy, science, academia, religion, where they just feel some people forgot that, science and religion are about like evolving our perspectives. And there are some scientists who do that, by the way. But, the whole, how do we get, a testable, when we create hypothesis and theories, and then we create, and then something is that we find out is fact. First, it starts out as theories. And I, just have a theory that I think is very plausible. So, but yeah, I think basically what I'm trying to say is I think this has been studied and maybe proved behind closed doors and secret rooms, and those people know I'm onto something. But it's not public knowledge mostly.
So a new force, that's Dana, and that's her book. And Dana is DANA KIPPEL. You can find her at danakippel.com. You can find her book there also. You can find her on TikTok, where she's very active at Dana Kippel. You could find her on Instagram as dana.thealien. You said you used to think you were an alien. Now you are Dana.thealien on Instagram for sure.
I know, which is so funny because it's almost like I'm Dana and the alien, and I've integrated both because I now I'm like, oh, you know what? I am human, and I'm going to take that on.
So we have lots of links, including a link to her magic classes and podcasts, all at the Life Changes show page for Dana Kippel. But basically, any of those links, you'll find her and find her book and the podcast, right? Heart Snacks, Candy for Your Soul. Is that you, or is that?
Oh, yes. It's called, I think I've rebranded it to Heart Snacks, Metaphysic, Magic, and Mental Health, but I'm taking a break from that to work on a fantasy book, actually. So that's on hiatus.
And we're so glad. Thanks for saying that, because we're so glad that we got to get you on the show before
Yes.
that hiatus.
Yes.
Thank you so much for making this happen.
Yes. Thanks for reaching out several times. Because I always tell people if you reach out enough, like people are going to say yes. I have to reach out to people 12 times sometimes to get a yes. And it's the people that only reach out once. And I'm like, I almost test people. I don't answer the first email because I'm like, you have to reach out more than once because no one's going to answer that.
Well, I'm happy to say that you said yes to us the very first
Of
time, but it
course.
was not in your schedule,
I
and
had to change it.
it
Yeah.
took months for us to
Yeah.
get to here. But so
Her plasma is
appreciate.
hard to get.
And so actually, as we bring this to a close, I think a question that might be in some people's consciousness is that, well, what if that's dealing in like magic or black magic or demons or something like that.
I would
Oh,
say that
you
if they
never get
believe
that?
that. No, I of course I do. I would say if they believe that, then that's true. Because the thing is, we live in a world of beliefs. But what I would say is plasma is a neutral, reflective, benevolent substance, almost like unconditional love. And it what you know, it can be used, I would say, for good or bad. And beyond that, it is, a very mysterious substance. But with that said, it can be only used for good on a multidimensional level. You can obviously use it for bad, for instance, like people are doing now and, some kind of unstable fusion reactors, like that's for bad and that could hurt our world and it's not very synergistic with nature. And then, there's more like cold fusion stuff that maybe is a little bit safer or even beyond fusion, plasma experiments that are more harmonious. But it's definitely a dual substance here on Earth, but in a multidimensional sense, it is beyond duality. And what beyond duality I think is love and curiosity and awe and all that good stuff. So, but yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to convince anyone of anything. I think, people have to follow what they feel and the, people who are ready to resonate this with this will open up to it and realize it's a purely a creative substance that you can, connect with that is supporting all of us. And it's like the mother god to the father god of consciousness. So it's just the suppressed female god of the ages that they did demonize for 1,000 years because it held our magic power and it connects us to God without any, structures. So that's that.
And that's that. Well, that's this for now, Dana. This has been so great and very exciting. I'm sure we've touched on a lot of different subjects, and I trust people's consciousness will be piqued to get them to learn more, follow you, get the book, and know that there's much more out there than meets the eye.
Yeah, sometimes that's why I think people, like you said, why are people interested in what I'm even saying when I have no credentials? Sometimes there's just a feeling you have and you can't prove it, just like when you love someone. And I think when people hear what I say, they feel the truth and they feel like I'm onto something and they may feel they're onto something, but they can't prove it. And that is a beautiful feeling, once again, that is a mystery and you can't prove it or explain it. You can just experience it. So if I can plant seeds of curiosity, I've done my job and the rest is not up to me.
Well, thank you for the seeds of curiosity and piquing our interest, and you've been delightful and such a pleasure to connect
Thank
with.
you. Thank you guys for having me on.
Thank you, Dana. All the best, and looking forward to much more from your camp. Until
Thank
next
you.
time, all the
All right.
best.
Bye, guys.
Bye. So much fun.
It's amazing. Like I said, the right person at the right time, and this is awareness everybody can benefit from. It's not just something interesting, it's something that's paramount to life and how we engage.
Talk about the right time. There's so much of effervescent people that are out there, beautiful looking, and selling us this or selling us that, and here she's trying to tell us something that's not free around us, and that's for us or with us or what.
I think that's part of the challenge is it challenges the whole program. We've been programmed disconnected, separate, lack, and that everything else is just a random coincidence or by happenstance, rather than the fact that we're all connected. I like to say that we were taught that the brain is first gear when actually it's second gear, and the heart is on. The heart's always on and exchanging information with the field. At night through dream states, during the day, you get on an elevator, you feel the person that's in there, whether it's good or not comfortable. So this information exchange is happening. Then the brain's saying, what do I think about that? Is it safe? Does it remind me of somebody or something, et cetera, et cetera. So starting to look at all of that and starting to take this information and live from an always connected place rather than I'm separate from somebody sitting across the room. It changes the whole game.
Well, speaking of game changers, actually, it's in her mission. Her mission is to empower people from the inside out to become their truest self. Thank you. And with that, it's time for our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Samantha, and I'm feeling very restless and disconnected more and more each day. What can I do to calm myself down and reduce my overwhelming stress?
Dearest Samantha, I lovingly suggest that you begin grounding yourself with a simple daily exercise. Having been to your home, I know that there are several trees close by, and I believe that if you begin hugging a tree each day, that you will find relief. Hugging a tree might sound simple or even a little quirky, but it actually offers a mix of emotional, mental, and even subtle physical benefits. Whether you see it as symbolic or scientific, there are real gifts you can receive. When I hug trees, I feel more connected with my higher self, and at the same time, I become more grounded. Even if you're simply outside of your home in your busy neighborhood, you can change your emotional state by hugging a tree. I find that when I hug a tree, I calm down and experience stress relief. I believe that the grounding effect I get helps me tremendously. Trees are literally rooted in the earth. Hugging one can help us feel more steady, present, and centered. When I hug a tree, my mood improves and anxiety disappears, and I experience increased feelings of peace and happiness. And so many people tell me that they, like me, instantly feel a sense of connection to nature, to life, or even something spiritual when they physically engage with a tree. The air around trees feels fresher because trees release oxygen and beneficial compounds that can make the air feel cleaner and more energizing. The Japanese have reported that trees emit natural oils and have concluded that these compounds may support immune function and relaxation. I personally enjoy feeling the bark, noticing the smell, and being still for a few moments. I believe this activates our senses and this can gently pull us out of overthinking. For me, there are several blessings when I hug trees. It gets me outside, slows me down, and connects me with Mother Nature, even when the tree is on a busy street. I always feel calmer and happier with the simple practice of tree hugging. I look forward to hearing how your tree hugging experiences assist you. And please know, Samantha, that you don't need to feel anything dramatic. Sometimes the gift is just a tiny bit more calmness, clarity, or grounded presence. And that is enough.
Thank you, Dorothy. And after hugging that tree, if you have a question for Dorothy, calm your plasma and write her at AskDorothy@LifeChangesShow.com.
And for our performance segment, we have an emerging artist, a vocalist, a composer, a ritual songwriting and creativity mentor, a meditator, Marcy Made of Light. Welcome, Marcy, to the Life Changes Show.
Hi, how you doing?
Oh, you know I'm great because you've been listening to the show.
Yes, I have.
And because we have you on now, and we're going to get, this is an interesting, it's almost like the music to the show that we've been having, and it continues with you. Mm-hmm. As I was listening to our guest story, Dana, I had to think of your story growing up and your relationship with plasma, actually, but with music and frequency and all of that. So potentially a really good place to start is where you started with connecting with yourself, or rather maybe disconnecting with yourself.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I'm so blown away by Dana, that's incredible. And yeah, there was a lot of similarities I felt between my story and her story. Early childhood trauma and overcoming and working on healing and finding all these different modalities, and then coming into relationship with what I heard her, you know, saying as the feminine divine. And that is also my story. And music has been a big part of my life. From an early age, I started playing classical violin at age 7. And it was one of those moments where I saw someone in my first grade class playing a violin, and something, like some ethereal, etheric voice, maybe, I didn't know what it was at the time, but told me that, like, I must do that. I must do that. And I begged my mom for a year, at least every single day I begged her. She's like, no, you do too many after school activities. You won't play it. No, no, no. I was relentless. I just knew that music was something that was supposed to be a part of my life. So how do we know these things when we come in as young children? I mean, there's evidence of this all over, you know, the world. We all have our own individual stories of things that we were inclined to at a young age. And music was one of those things. And yeah, it was part of my path, I believe, of actually being able to calm myself down as an anxious child. And as a teenager, as I continued to get more and more proficient at the violin, and coincidentally, not because of this, but in parallel, I was developing severe depression as a 13-year-old. After a lot of death in my family, there was probably 6 concurrent deaths of important people.
Wow.
Me at age of 13. And I grew up atheist and agnostic. My parents didn't really give me any frameworks. And so I think that's been a good thing for me in some senses. I didn't have to unindoctrinate myself from anything. But at the time it didn't, I didn't have any, you know, very, I didn't have any frameworks to work with. And I spun into a depression that lasted most of my teens and culminating kind of in a suicidal attempt at 18. And that was kind of the beginning of the end of my darkest moment, where after 3 months in the psychiatric ward, I came out of that and I said, I will never commit suicide. I'm committed to fully growing and healing in this lifetime, no matter what it takes, no matter what it takes. And again, that was such a dark time of my life. If anybody who's listening has ever been suicidally depressed for a long time, it feels completely impossible to bring yourself out of that. It's a dark place that it's so terrifying that you never ever think you'll be able to overcome it. And I ended up being able to do that. And through, I think, just a series of fated destiny, but being also really dedicated to listening to the truth underneath. I think what standard society says is the thing. It's something in me deeply was like, I don't know if that's the whole truth. What's deeper here? Where can we go that's deeper? Huh? And it led me to actually, in college, not long after my suicidal episode, I got into NYU for theater and ritual, and I was doing music and composing. And I was working so hard that I burnt out. I had adrenal fatigue. And I was 21 years old. I was on the sixth floor of a walk-up in New York City, and I literally couldn't walk up a flight of stairs. It took me 40 minutes from the ground to the top of my apartment to walk up, because I was so ill with this fatigue that seemingly came out of nowhere. And what happened was I discovered yoga. I went vegan and I started doing yin yoga. It was the only thing that I could do at the time. And not long after that, I attribute it to this health crisis I went to and adrenal fatigue. But I had a moment where I actually became like, I had a spiritual awakening moment, my first awakening moment that I had never experienced before. I didn't have any framework for what a spiritual awakening was. I didn't know what being psychic was, but suddenly I had psychic powers overnight. I could hear people's thoughts. I could see auric fields. I could, you know, sort of predict the future. All these crazy things that, coming from the Midwest, we, you know, it's like, that's not part of the culture. I had no idea what was happening to me. It was actually quite terrifying. And luckily, I had the good fortune of moving to California right after school, where I began to understand that there were actually frameworks in terms of like ancient traditions of all over the world that had language for these. And so the direction that I got from my own personal healing crisis, the only thing I could do at that time was actually to become a healer myself. And it took on this life of its own that I could never have imagined for myself. And I've worked with thousands of clients all over the world to not necessarily just for their own, you know, psychic or sensitivity, but to really awaken them and help them move through similar traumas that I was able to clear and help them, awaken to their consciousness and their true aliveness.
I didn't know a tenth of what you shared, and yet I feel like so much of that is in the music and also other things that we may hopefully get a chance to chat about. In this song that we're going to hear, or this mantra or this chant, however, this piece, are there elements of some of your story directly?
Well, it's hard to say. I think the answer is yes and no. You know, this piece is fully a devotional piece of writing that I really wrote in devotion and offering to like this higher power, let's call it the goddess, the consciousness that I eventually discovered in meditation and through my teacher. And so I've been practicing, working with these mantras, and I think we can talk about this later, but ultimately, what I discovered through meditation and non-dual practice is that by saying mantra, by going into stillness, by going into direct experience of the consciousness, by actually using music to put form to the divine, to the plasma, let's say, the goddess actually is embodied in these words themselves. So, I truly believe now, and through direct experience and meditation, I've learned that I am no other than an expression of the goddess, which is expression of consciousness, which is expression of oneness as all things. So that's the long answer. Narayani is an actual name of a goddess from the Indian Hindu tradition, and it's a traditional name of a goddess. And so it's actually a devotional prayer in worship for our awakening and liberation.
Well, we'll let the audience experience and those who haven't yet. And actually, almost for sure, most of them haven't because this track just came out this week. So congratulations, the first one we're going to play. Thank you for letting us pretty much release it this week with you here on the Life Changes Show. This was done in collaboration with Grammy-nominated spiritual artist, your dear friend, Ben Linebach, is it?
Yep, Ben Linebach.
Yeah. So this is really special. Congratulations to you, and let's all enjoy a portion of the Durga piece of our guest, Marcy, Maid of Light.
Satya.
RC Made of Light. Thank you so much for sharing that with us today.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
So find her on Instagram at Miss Made of Light. Miss M-I-S-S Made of Light. And then we have a link for Marcy. Actually, is what is that? MarcyMadeOfLight.mystrikingly.com?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what it is. MarcyMadeOfLight.mystrikingly.com. So Marcy, so yes, the relationship you have with yourself and with your journey, with your mission, feels like it's coming through in your voice, and you know how powerful the voice is. And people say the eyes are the window to the soul. I think the voice is certainly close to it, if not more so.
Definitely to the heart.
To the heart. Okay. Yes. And so one of your things is you support people obviously with your music, and frequencies with for their own healing, but also you support people in helping them bring out their voice and bring them in voice together. Tell us why that and why you think it's important. Oh, and actually, while we're at it, somebody who we need to thank, Colin Martin, for introducing you to us, because this is something he does beautifully as well, obviously. And I think you've done this together. So tell us more about that.
Yes, we have. Oh, yeah. Colin and I have a song circle that we're co-leading here in Nevada City, which is a new endeavor for me as somebody who's been, you know, soloist, a violin soloist, and my entire artistic career really focused on what I would call the one-to-many or performance model of art, like singing, music making is, you know, you go to a concert and someone's on stage and they're singing to you and you're a passive receiver in the audience, which is powerful, but I feel there's many indications in, you know, the collective right now and also what's happening, you know, literally day to day in our society that model is shifting, and there's a great, great need for unifying ourselves through voice and singing together. And so expressing our devotion, becoming connected, the power of group singing at times of deep challenge is literally so potent and powerful. It can't be underestimated. And so, yeah, I've taken it upon myself to create spaces and environments where people can experience their aliveness and their voice and their connection to the sacred on a regular basis. And I hope to even teach others how to lead song circles and write their own singable songs, because that's actually the transmission. Like, music is one of the most powerful transmitters, obviously, like we said, of the soul, of what's true in the heart. And it's the truest transmission of the sacred that probably exists. That's a huge statement, but I said it. So I think that in times where we are so inundated with the mundane, hyper-tasked with little micro things to do every day, we're exhausted, we're overworked, we're isolated, we're disconnected, it's really difficult for us sometimes to turn our minds off. And we know we should meditate, we know we should go to yoga, and yet we're sitting there. How do we actually tune ourselves in a really quick way back to that? And yeah, the violin when I was 7 was the only thing, when the vibration was under my chin, that would actually calm my anxiety. The only thing. And so it's singing together is this like almost revolutionary need that we have to have at this time. And I'm believing that, I'm in the belief now that I could do, and I have done many other things for work in my life. I've been a business consultant. I've been a fundraising consultant. I've had my somatic practice, and I'm full in on music and this mission, because I believe that we need people who keep the frequency of beauty and joy alive now in these times. It's more important than ever. So, yeah, that is why I'm doing what I'm doing and what I'm up to. And of course, I'll never stop writing other songs and about humanity and about the heart and, maybe songs for performance one day. But I think, yeah, the true joy is to sing in groups and be together. We need it.
Wonderful. We're going to get to hear another excerpt of another song in just a moment here. But before we do, there are two things about your story that I wanted to have come up here. And I'm actually going to start by quoting our very own Mark LeJour, who the other day he said, "I think I want to start calling it the calming system or the calm system." And I didn't know where he was going at. And he's like, as opposed to the nervous system, like, do you want to be nervous? I'm like, no, actually, then let's call it the calm system. And so clever, right? And that has stuck with me. So it's interesting that you were auditioning for Making the Band, right?
When I was 19,
Right. And out of 3,000, you made it up to 60, the top 60, and probably would have kept on going, except what happened.
Oh, yeah, I was on the third day of auditions and I got up there and it was being filmed and I was in the front row with, P. Diddy's whole crew. He wasn't there, and I'm thankful for that at this moment, but his whole entire crew of management team, and I was there singing, and my throat just closed instantaneously, somatically just closed. I could not sing. And the words completely disappeared. Boom, like my body shut down. They allowed me three more times to repeat because I got a little bit out before it closed and they heard me sing. And I think Lorianne Gibson said, she's like, "I want her to keep singing. No, her, like, let her keep singing." And I couldn't. Nothing would come out, no sound, no nothing. And
And
they
at the
gave me three
time that,
tries.
yeah, go on, sorry.
Oh, they gave me three tries and they ushered me off the stage and that was it. And I spent years trying to figure out what happened.
And at the time, you probably thought that was a bad thing, right?
I did. Yeah, at the time it was my dream to be a pop star. I didn't know any other ways. I didn't know there were other ways to use my voice. I was young and I loved pop music. I grew up on it and who doesn't want to be a star when they're, a young girl? Like that was my dream. And it wasn't till I discovered sacred music, conscious music, when I came to California when I was 20, 22 years old, that I learned the connection between my somatic body and my voice. My body was literally telling me, "You're not supposed to do that. You're
Right.
not meant to make pop music. You are not a pop star. Like, that is not your path." Like, and so now when I look back at it, I thank my own wisdom of my body. I thank myself because it would have, who knows, timelines. It was an alternate timeline, but it was not meant for me ultimately. The voice is so sacred, and I think my mission, right? Dharma, karma, the karma to even be able to sing, is a gift that needs to be expressed in a way that's sacred and uplifts.
Hear, hear, more power to you. And so fast forward to you learning about the relationship between trauma and creativity and why I thought about Mark's quote, because you say that when people have those kinds of experiences or creative blocks, it's something about safety or lack of safety in the nervous system, right?
That's right. Yeah, when people are blocked, and I worked through my own creative blocks. I couldn't sing, I couldn't sing either. I would get such high anxiety. I wanted to write songs desperately. It took me 5 years of somatic work and hypnotherapy to actually be able to write a song with somebody else without breaking down in tears and shaking. There was so much trauma and shame and fear that needed to discharge through my body, and false beliefs that I had about myself and limiting beliefs and really just all these I think stories that are stored in the soma, like stories that were stored in my somatic body that needed to be cleared in order for me to live my dream, let's say, or serve this gift. And that is true not just in creativity with music, that's actually true of everyone with their in their life and their life force. There's usually some core fear, whether it be from past lives, from current life trauma, that's preventing them, limiting beliefs, that's preventing them from really truly being able to express. And what I was lucky to stumble my way through is to find tools and modalities that worked to heal that. Now I can perform on stage. Now I can write songs with multiple people. Like, my collaborators are all over the world and I love them, and it's such a joy to create. But at first it was utterly terrifying, and it was almost painful, because the desire is inherent in all of us to actually, we are creative beings, we are inherently creation, and each of us has a spark of our own magic creativity in us, regardless of the modality, regardless of the, you know, is it songs, is it painting, is it writing, is it comedy, is it, what is that? But we all have that creative force in us that, if we're blocked and wanting to liberate that, there's ways to do that. And the key is usually through the body, which is directly working with the nervous system to discharge these underlying core core fears.
How interesting to know that you had trouble collaborating, and now you are the collaborator of collaborators, working with so many artists and people, and you're going on tour this summer singing with Michael Gunger and the Mystic Hymnal Project, and so more power to you. Well, obviously it worked, and here you are. So we have touched upon the Divine Mother so many times in this show. How fitting that you're going to take us into closing the show with a devotional piece to the Divine Mother. Tell us about it.
Yeah. Well, Narayani, I got them confused. I thought the first one you were playing is Narayani, but actually it turns out they're all the same. The Divine Mother has many names. She has 1,000 names and 1,000 faces, and she is all of them. And so this is a piece devoted to the Divine Mother. It's actually from it's inspired by an ancient Vedic text called the Devi Mahatmyam. The Durga Sapta Shloki is one of the longer verses in this epic mystic tale, basically, of a battle that Durga enters on the battlefield, and she fights the asuras, the demons that come one after another, there's thousands and thousands of demons, and the demons come, and Durga grows new limbs and fights them mightily with her sword, complete fearlessness, and eventually defeats them. And this is actually a direct parable or metaphor to our own minds, how our own light and our own power and our own ability to witness ourselves when we're in trigger and deep fear. The metaphor is the demons are only aspects of our own mind that doesn't recognize ourselves already as pure consciousness, pure love, as pure awareness. So we're praising the Divine Mother, who helps us fight our internal battles, who helps us win, who helps us end suffering, and helps us awaken.
And so it is. So this is Marcy Maid of Light's offering here on the Life Changes Show, pre-recorded, Narayani.
Beholds the trees in the sky. Her light shines like the
Marcy, Made of Light. By the way, Marcy is M-A-R-C-I-E, and Made of Light, just like it sounds, all one name. Go to Instagram, find her at Miss Made of Light, and then at marcymadeoflight.mystrikingly.com. Marcy, what a pleasure to have you share with us, as you did, from the heart, and share your music. All the best to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. What a pleasure.
Looking forward to more coming from your musical camp and getting to experience your, well, concerts and all of that, and your circles. Seem very powerful. All the best to you again.
Thank you so much.
And with a big thank you again to Marcy Made of Light and to Dana Kippel. That is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Lejeur, and our whole family here at the Life Changes Show, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at the Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.